This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. All the English sides top their groups in the Champions League. Great news for the greatest league in the world. TM. Bernardo Silva cushions Manchester City past PSG in a brilliant second half. At what point should we ask, is Messi the problem? Are the front three the problem? If Pochettino can't make them run, then what can he do at United? Thiago Alcantara, oh sweet heaven, what a strike. Volley, half volley, stone skimmer, who cares? Let's just talk about that goal forever. If we do move on, we'll celebrate Junior Messias from delivering fridges to delivering at the Wanda. Inter are through for the first time in years. Sporting have made it and get a criminal record in the morning. Score for Real Madrid in the evening, the curious case of Karim Benzema. There's the fan-led review to discuss. Paul Watson is on after 4 years away to talk about Kitmas. And there's time for a Premier League preview as well. All that plus your questions. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jonathan Faduba, how are you?
I'm good, Max. Nice to see you.
It's nice to see you too. Bonjour, ça va? Philippe Auclair.
Ça va très bien, Max. Je te remercie.
Hello, Barry.
Do you quit a vax?
All right, then. This is from Opta. Who knows? Barry could have said whatever he wanted there. And I feel sometimes he would like to say things that I don't understand that are derogatory, but maybe that was just a pleasantry. We'll find out later. It was just a nice hello, I presume, Barry.
It was a greeting in Irish. God bless you or good day to you.
That's very kind of you. I tip my hat. So the four English teams have won all 11 of their home games combined in the UEFA Champions League so far this season, scoring 33 goals in the process. They all top their groups. Let's start then with Group A, Manchester City 2, PSG 1. They're the group winners then, City, PSG through in second. And, well, Jonathan, what a brilliant second half this was.
Yeah, the Man City PSG game, yeah, it was very exciting. I enjoyed it. I think it was one of those games where you kind of felt like it could be the final, and you kind of wondered, will it be the final? And kind of, you know, were you already watching the final at a certain point? You know, like, is it already May? I enjoyed the game a lot. And I think that the downfall, I suppose, was kind of the front three of PSG, which is, I'm sure, what a lot of people will be talking about. I have to be honest, my main takeaway from the game was I felt a tinge of sadness about Neymar. I got sort of about 75 minutes in and I was like, he's not really that good anymore. And it kind of made me sad. And I looked into it and I realised, like, obviously he's going to be 30 in February. And I started rubbing my eyes and thinking, where's Neymar's career gone in a way? And had this sort of tinge of slight sadness, I have to be honest. I thought it was quite poor.
Is this the first time, Jonathan, that you've felt old yourself? Is this what it is? Is this your first existential crisis? Because there's going to be a lot more.
Do you know what? I'm not that old, but I remember Neymar when he was at Flamengo and everyone was like, when he was at Santos and the goal he scored against Flamengo, when everyone was like, who's this guy? And he's like a YouTube sensation. And to think that's like 10 years ago now is kind of very, yeah, I guess it was a little bit of nostalgia there in me. And I was like, you know what? He's kind of declined, Neymar, I thought. I thought of the three forwards, he was the one that kind of struggled the most in the game. And ultimately, obviously, he missed that big chance, which he should have really taken. And in the end, you know, Man City were just a little bit better. And I thought, by the way, Bernardo Silva was incredible. And I think he's having a really, really good season. And I think he needs a bit of respect on his name because he's been incredible this season, I think.
Yeah, I think he had 100% pass completion, including Barry, that touch for the winning goal, which was so good.
Both Man City's goals, they were quite similar, actually, but from different sides of the pitch. And his little cushion touch to the corner of the six-yard box for Gabriel Jesus to... I did the minute-by-minute, and I sort of described the finish as a quite nonchalant flick into the far corner to avoid the traffic. But looking at it again this morning, he kind of scuffed it. But anyway, it went in. It was a brilliant goal. There were impressive performances from Man City players all over the pitch. Silva was a standout. I was very impressed with Rodri as well, because as well as being a midfield enforcer, he played some wonderful passes. Riyad Mahrez was brilliant. Gundogan was good. Cancelo was good. just good performances all over the pitch. But for a while, I think you said it was a very good second half. I thought it was a very good first half as well. But it did look like it was going to be a repeat of the corresponding picture in Paris, where City absolutely battered PSG and lost 2-0 somehow. And when they went a goal down here, Pep would just look traumatised on the touchline, like as if he couldn't, not again. But they got it. And I suppose the thing is that the outcome of this game, it didn't really matter. Ultimately, it was totally inconsequential. They didn't need to play, but it was a massively entertaining game. I really enjoyed it.
Before we get on to the front three of PSG, which I think is probably the most interesting part of this football match, Raheem Sterling is now the third joint highest Champions League goalscorer with 23, level with Lampard. Only Rooney and Scholes are higher. He's in this interesting position, Philippe, where he is perhaps behind Grealish and Foden for Manchester City. Neither of them were there yesterday. And ahead of them for England. He has scored in his last three games. What does he do?
Well, very good question, which I was asking myself when I saw the teams yesterday. And I thought, if indeed Grealish or Foden had been fit, I think probably either of them would have been chosen ahead of Raheem Sterling by Pep Guardiola. It's an odd one. And to be honest, it would probably need a bit more reflection than the answer I'm going to give you, you know, early in the morning. Is it due to the way the team functions? Probably the difference of level between national and international level, the different type of what is needed from you with England, what is expected from you. England is not just the winger and scorer, is also genuinely one of the bosses of the team now. He's one of the pillars of Gareth Southgate, which is obviously not for Pep Guardiola. And you get that feeling that, in a way, he's grown more with England than he's grown with Manchester City. Is that unfair to say that? That England gives him the kind of environment in which we can see the very best of him. And it's not a question of motivation. He's just as motivated for Manchester City as he is for England. But perhaps it doesn't quite have, and that will be the only thing, that Raheem Sterling is not quite technically as proficient, I really apologize for saying that, as perhaps some of the other players in the Manchester City team. For example, Bernardo Silva, he's not. Or even Phil Foden, he's not. And the level of technical excellence which is required, demanded by Pep Guardiola, is such that because of that, he's found himself in a situation where when things are not quite going his way and he's missing a few chances, he finds himself out of the picture. It's a tough one. And to be honest, Max, when I'm saying that, I have the feeling that I'm being really unfair to a top player, not just an excellent player, but a top player who perhaps we would have more respect for, even more respect for, because we already have a lot for him, if he were in a different club environment. It's a really odd one. It's a really odd one.
Moving on to PSG, Ross says, how much money does Qatar have to give Messi, Mbappe and Neymar for them to track back? As a pod, Jonathan, we seem to be sort of united in feeling, as led by Jonathan Wilson and Johnny Lou, that, you know, Ronaldo, despite scoring all these goals, is the problem at Manchester United, or is a problem. Do we have to ask? I mean, it seems so ludicrous to say out loud, is Messi a problem at PSG at this level?
No, I don't think Messi's a problem. I think number one in that game for me personally, I think the Verratti missing was a big thing. The drop off from Verratti to Ander Herrera is huge. I think Verratti's one of the best midfielders in Europe and has been for a while. And kind of when he doesn't play, I think he had some slight injury worries. And when he doesn't play, PSG are markedly different. That you know, they don't quite control the midfield as well as they can do, and Herrera is a bit more of a kind of a terrier, isn't he? He's not really like a ball controller, so I think that's one area. And then obviously the connection from midfield to the forwards is an issue. I think with Messi, it's just simple fact that he's just a bit like Ronaldo, really, just getting on a bit. And I think that's like another sad fact. But you know, he's just a bit older than he was. I always felt that, you know, when Messi went to PSG in the summer, there was all this kind of furore around it, and everyone was saying he's going to destroy Liga. He's going to, you know, it's going to be impossible. It's going to be, it's all over for the rest of football forever. I didn't really quite agree with that, because Liga is quite a I mean, Philippe will agree, I'm sure. It's so different to La Liga in terms of the way it's played. Neymar had a similar struggle. Adapting to Liga is difficult. Messi's only, I think, scored 4 goals this season so far. And only one of them in Liga in 6 games. And having to adapt to a completely new league at that age is a difficult challenge. And I think even the great Messi is going to find that difficult. It's a lot more kind of agricultural in tackles and things like that. You get a lot less space. It's not as fluid as Spain, I think. I'm not sure what Philippe will say, but that's my perspective on it. And I think Messi improves the team, especially in the Champions League. You see, that's where the majority of his goals have come. But I think with PSG, it's just that those three forwards, that they're not... None of them is really a tracking back expert. And it's the balance between kind of controlling the game and having those incredible forwards and then also the defensive side of it, which you need. You know, when you look at teams like City and Liverpool, who are kind of favourites, they play the kind of... The forwards defend as well in transitions. They're very good at getting back. And I think that's just the key difference. It's you know, Neymar, Mbappe and Messi are incredible players, but can they do that defensive work that you need at the top level? Because when you're playing in sort of Champions League semi-finals, finals, that kind of thing, where the margins are really small, just that little bit of reluctance to track back at times, I think that's the key difference that I think they need to figure out.
Is there a level where you can be so good you don't have to? Because Mo Salah is on right now as good as them and is doing that. And, you know, not having the ball, you are, you know, without the ball is really key. And in this game, you know, PSG are going to be without the ball for a lot of time. And I don't know if you, when you were watching it, Barry, you know, they don't do the defensive work that, you know, Mane and Salah do. You know, at what point do you earn the right to not have to bother defending? When you're Romario in the 90s? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, Jonathan describes it as a little bit of reluctance to track back. It's not a little bit. It's complete refusal to track back. And when it's three players, you might let one player get away with that if you've willing runners either side of him or whatever. But and that clearly doesn't suit the Maurizio Pochettino ethos. So it seems ludicrous to say you're carrying three passengers. They did set up a goal, almost set up a second. Or sorry, they did score a goal between them. And then Neymar linked up well with Angel Di Maria when he came on and should have scored. So there is a constant goal threat there. But, it is not for me to tell Leo Messi, Neymar and Kylian Mbappe how they should or should not play football. It really isn't. But it is clearly a problem. I don't know how you solve the problem because they're pretty undroppable. So maybe the best way of solving the problem is to leave the club and go somewhere where you might have more willing workers in the northwest of England.
And what is the latest on that, Philippe? And should Manchester United fans look at what's happening at PSG and go, should we be worried? PSG don't have an identity. That's something that Manchester United don't have. If Pochettino comes, what will he do?
Yeah, so you're going to bring the manager of a team without an identity to give an identity to a club that doesn't have an identity. That's an interesting one. Just to rebound on what Barry was saying, I think that this problem of players not tracking back is going to be sorted out next summer because Mbappe will be off. And to me, he's the most shocking of the three in terms of not tracking back. It's absolutely scandalous. Messi has never tracked back in his career. Never. When he was at Barcelona, at the height of his powers, he never tracked back.
And we didn't care. Yeah,
nobody cared. And of course, why would you ask him to track back when he's so magnificent at doing what he does? Neymar is actually the one who from time to time has kind of a brainwave saying, oh, maybe I should go back and try win the ball back. He does it from time to time. And there are loads of rumours floating in Paris that Lionel Messi is already making noises about going to where some of us thought he would go, which is to Miami very quickly. And that he's already had enough of the French football experience.
Sorry, you can't have Messi in a team with Ryan Shawcross managed by Phil Neville, can you?
Of course you can.
It's marvellous. I mean, I would love that. It's tremendous.
Yeah, why not? I mean, that's what I've been told. I'm not saying that it's necessarily 100% true. it's as true as many of the other rumours that we're hearing at the moment, Max. And the circus around Pochettino is amazing. The first thing that I found is the absolute incredible arrogance to believe that because Manchester United is calling, it's a call you've got to heed, and that every single manager on the planet is literally there on his knees begging Manchester United to take them on board. That's not the case. Manchester United have won absolutely zilch, apart from what, a Europa League, a League Cup, and an FA Cup since Fergie went. Look at what Paris Saint-Germain has won within that period of time, for starters. And the fact that Pochettino is not a happy bunny, that's not news. He's got big problems, relational problems with Leonardo at PSG. Many people, including myself, thought that the problems were such that he would leave last summer if there was a good offer, and the problems haven't been sorted. He's unhappy at the way that he's asked to look after those non-tracking back players without being able to put his print, so to speak, his mark on the team. That is true. On the other hand, is he desperate to go to Manchester United? I'm not so sure. And is Manchester and PSG? Why would they've qualified for the last 16 of the Champions League. They're running away with the title in France at the moment. Why would they want to part with the manager? I mean, it's like maybe they have also something to say in this, and they're not too keen. And no Zinedine Zidane is not waiting in the wings and waiting for Nasser Al-Khelaifi's call saying, "Oh, Nasser, here comes Zizou." No, no, no. Zizou is more interested in what's going to happen after the World Cup in 2022. So, yeah, at the moment, for me, it's hot air, hot air, hot air. And by the way, the last I hear about it is that we might have Ralf Rangnick now as an interim manager until the end of the season, at which point we will talk about Pochettino again.
But it does seem that Pochettino is leading this sort of weird Mourinho-esque, Alan Partridge-esque existence in Paris, you know, holed up in a travel tavern, dismantling his trouser press for his own amusement, while his wife still resides in London and his family are still in London. And
well, that's the way Guardiola lived for something like 2 years in Manchester when he was at the hotel and away from his family in Barcelona. Nobody was questioning it at the time.
Yeah, but he was involved in a project that was going incredibly well and had been built specifically tailored for his needs.
Very true.
Whereas Poch doesn't seem to have that in PSG. But you know, I think there is background personal family stuff going on that we're not privy to, but is obviously a factor in decisions that get made.
I mean, a lot of people have made the point it is easier to get to Paris from London than Manchester from London. You know, if you want to get there,
it's certainly cheaper if you're going on the train.
Anyway, look, those rumours will continue, of course. That'll do for part one. Part two will be all about Thiago. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Liverpool 2, Porto 0. Let's talk about that Thiago goal. Philippe, a thing.
The half volley, yes. We've had a long conversation about that. Yeah,
We had a row. And Mark Bosnich tweeted the pod to ask if that was a volley or a half volley. I'm sticking with half volley.
It was a half volley.
Yes.
It's a half volley.
Yeah.
And it just about qualifies because I think the ball was just about to drop when
you
hit it.
I agree.
So he hit it at the sweetest time. And I think the spin, you know, it's like when you're watching like a super slow-mo of a leg spinner, of a Shane Ward leg spinner. It's the thing of beauty. And the spin on that ball from Thiago is one of the most beautiful things I've seen this year in football. Just gorgeous. And the height, the way it skims, like this perfect stone on a perfect lake, and the way it nestles in the side of the net. Oh, and the way he balances himself as well. This is not luck. This is just a sumptuous player delivering a sumptuous strike. It's absolutely glorious. We can watch that on a loop, no problem.
Yeah. Paul says, when was the last time you went skimming stones? It's a nostalgic thing to think about.
I think this summer.
Oh, wow. Where were you? Mm-hmm. I'd love to go stone skimming with Philippe Auclair.
Do you actually go skimming stones?
Well, there were a few stones. there were a few stones around, yeah, and they were of the right shape, and there was an expanse of water. So I did what anybody in their right mind would do. Wouldn't you do that,
of
Max?
Course. When you find this, yes, when you find a really good smooth, yes, one, and it's thin like a disc, and it's kind of round, and you think, I can get 4 or 5 out of this. But yes, you made a point there, Barry. It's not like anyone packs their bag to go stone. It's a spontaneous action.
Yeah, unless you had a very deprived childhood, Max. That was the Russian family day out. Come on, kids. We're going stone skimming.
It looked like...
But, Dad, everyone else is going to Central, yeah, Park.
Oh, well, I...
Yeah, well, you're coming. You're skimming a stone.
It looked, Jonathan, like it didn't... It gives the optical illusion that it doesn't bounce. It just kind of... The spin makes it sort of take off like an aeroplane.
Yeah, I mean, Thiago's a fantastic player. He's not really, you could say, kick-started his career at Liverpool and kind of... He's kind of shone in moments, but not necessarily had that consistency. But he's capable of that. You know, he's a wonderful player, like technically. Yeah, it's definitely a stone skimmer for sure.
Patrick says, where on the Ethan Pinnock goal of the season does this Thiago goal stand, Barry? Lawrence says, how does Thiago's strike compare with Barry's header of the infamous Christmas show last year?
I do think this Thiago goal is being hideously overpraised, I have to say.
Oh, come on. Oh, come on. How?
I always judge brilliant goals. Would I have been able to do that? I think I would.
Oh, come on, Barry. Really?
I suppose it's a goal that, you know, like when you play cricket, one day you might play a cover drive that it's just perfection.
Maybe.
You time it. And you might be able to do it. And it might be that if you hit the ball millions of times, just the once, your number will come out of the hat and you will actually hit it as sweetly as Thiago. Whereas, you can try a million times, you'll never do what Mo Salah did for his second goal. Never. Because that was genius. And I think not enough is made of Salah's goal, I think.
I would like to state for the record
yes,
that I have, in the nets at Trent Bridge, I faced 8 balls from Mattia Muralitharan, arguably the world's greatest ever spin bowler, and he didn't get me out. So,
that is
like scoring that Thiago goal, playing good cover drives, not that hard.
Mark says, I think the reason some of us get so worked up on the subject of what is a volley and what isn't a volley and what's a half volley simply goes back to when we had to play headers and volleys because we didn't have enough people for a proper game and the definitions mattered. You're absolutely right. Wembley pairs, 3 and in, headers and volleys. Hours spent on Parker's piece doing that. Duncan Alexander says, XG of only 0.02. Sorry, he should have passed it. Here's some stats on Liverpool. 5 wins from 5 in the Champions League. They've scored 2 or more in 16 consecutive games in all competitions. The first team since Wolves in 1939 to achieve that. 17 goals in 17 games for Mo Salah. They're 8 games against Porto in the Champions League, have an aggregate score of 23-4. Liverpool are good. I think that's. I think we can safely say that. And they've done remarkably well. And what we all said was the group of death. They have done remarkably well. Also in that group, Atletico Madrid and AC Milan. AC Milan won 1-0. Vital win for them. Keeps their hopes alive. And a brilliant story about someone I hadn't heard of until the 87th minute of yesterday's game. Junior Messias. Gab Marcotti tweeting, 8 years ago, he was a 23-year-old guy who emigrated from Brazil to Italy to work as a delivery man, had never played professionally. A few minutes ago, he scored for Milan in the Champions League. He was delivering fridges, playing in Italy's fourth division. And you could see, Jonathan, like, you know, sometimes people score a goal and they get a bit emotional. You think, oh, you know, it's only a goal. But that meant so much to this guy.
Yeah, he's... I couldn't believe the story, really, to be honest. It's kind of come out of nowhere. I mean, yeah, looking at his career history, he's been at Crotone and ASDC, Gozzano and places like that. So it's always wonderful when you get these stories, obviously, you know, a 30-year-old playing in the Champions League. I'm not sure what it says about modern Milan. I don't know if maybe they had injuries or something like that. I mean, he's played 2 games in Serie A all season. So he's not like a regular or anything like that. But yeah, you know, it just brings up these wonderful moments like that, the Champions League. And yeah, it was a lovely reaction to the goal as well.
The result means that Porto stay second, but Philippe, this group is so beautifully poised, isn't it? You know, Liverpool are away with it, but Porto have 5 points, Milan have four, Atleti have four, Porto host Atleti, Milan home to Liverpool, who could rest players.
Would it make a difference? Will they want to be rested? To be honest, they could have rested players for this particular encounter and look who was on the pitch, you know. The one thing that I'm really surprised by is Atletico. I mean, hands up, who would think that Atletico would be in a position to be eliminated from the group phase and would have 4 points out of what? 15. That's crazy. And they didn't look that great, to be absolutely honest. There is something you have to ask yourself, if there is the moment that I think we've all been waiting for, at least some of us, when the Simeone project finally crumbles and we are rid of this team. I'm sorry. I'm so biased, Max.
That's okay.
I can't stand them.
You just think eventually...
I can't stand them. Eventually... Some people admire them. You know, they've had fabulous results and recently. But I live with this hope that one day this will crumble and we'll be rid of the whole thing. And this might be this year.
I think I've told this story before, but, you know, Cambridge United in the you know, early 90s played this terrible long ball football, but we had success. It was just great, on and on and on. And we just hit the channels and hit the channels and hit the channels. And then we just failed to get into the Premier League. We got to the playoffs and we got hammered by Leicester. And then halfway through the next season, we were playing terribly. We were bottom of the league or something. And John Beck overnight said, we're going to play passing football, right? And, I know, you know, it's a slightly incongruous comparison with Atletico Madrid. They played some nice football, but, you know, their style is what you don't like, Philippe. So that next Saturday, I think Phil Chappell got the ball and played a side foot pass to our right back, right? About 10 yards. And the whole crowd went absolutely wild. They hadn't seen a side foot pass of 10 yards for like 4 years. And this moment was just absolutely extraordinary. I mean, of course, we got relegated and the rest is history. But it was just such an extraordinary moment just to see this crowd who'd been watching very successful shite for so long, just sort of being released in this moment. It was wonderful.
Just one thing, but perhaps, because also to stress, is that this Milan side is totally unlike previous incarnations of this. It's an incredibly young team, for starters. Despite the fact that it's got people like Olivier Giroud in it, it is a young team. So, and I'm sorry about Atletico fans if I've upset you. Okay. I know they've done very well last season and so forth, but I do think that with players like the ones they've got, they could play a different kind of football. And it's the shithousery. I do like some shithousery, but not that amount of
right.
Shithousery.
Yeah, that's it. It just reaches your level.
Oh,
just,
God, this is, yeah, this absolute...
goes into the red, like, on Philippe's dial, yeah, of shithousery.
It's like a wine, like, I don't know what percentage, like when it's over 13.5, I think, sorry, guys, you know, I'd rather have port. You know, there's one point which you've got to stop.
There's another T-shirt for merchandise, Philippe's face with I'd rather have port. Group C then, Lars Siverton's tweeting, another big moment for all of us here in the Sebastian Haller is terrific society, otherwise known as Shits. He says, Shits assemble, scoring twice for Ajax as they confirm top spot in Group C. Great achievement, 9 goals in the Champions League. So well done to Sebastian Allaire and Ajax, Jonathan, playing great stuff.
Yeah, I watched this game because I wanted to see what the hype was around Ten Hag, obviously with the links to Manchester United. And you can definitely see why he's done well this season. You know, they're really good at in and out of possession. They've got some good players. Yeah, Allaire actually was on the bench and came on at half time and was like, you know what, I'm going to turn this game on its head. They were 1-0 down at half time. George Kevin Nkudu, I don't know if anyone remembers him, Spurs fans might remember him. He was actually playing quite well for Besiktas, created some good chances, and Kyle Larin up front missed so much. It was almost comical the amount of chances he missed in the first half to make it sort of 2-3, 4-0 to Besiktas. So then at halftime they brought on Haller, and the game completely changed. He plays as a target man. The Ajax way is kind of that. They really try and play the ball out from the back. It's incredible watching it, the commitment to sort of just that style. And they do have some decent players as well, like Anthony. David Neres wasn't great, but in the game, you know, he's had a good season, but he wasn't great in this game. But yeah, no, I can definitely, I think my conclusion from the game was you can see why Ten Hag's getting that level of interest. I don't know if he can translate that to the Premier League and kind of come in and, you know, change Manchester United in the future if he was to get the job. But this Ajax team has been really, really, really impressive. And obviously to knock Dortmund out of the competition essentially is a huge achievement.
And one thing, I mean, Ten Hag is doing a wonderful job, but also what should be stressed is that his board is doing an absolutely amazing job as well, and the scouts and recruiters and so forth. And I remember this thing when Edwin van der Sar was asked, you know, after Ajax did so well in the Champions League, what they were going to do when, as will happen, Van de Beek, De Ligt, De Jong would leave the club, as was obvious what they would do. And Van der Sar looked at the journalists and said, well, we've been planning for this for 2 years already. That's the way they work. They already know, because Anthony, for example, I think is a wonderful player. He might go somewhere else. Somebody might be interested in Dusan Tadic again, or Sebastian Haller again. But the way they work, they've already planned for that. And it won't be a problem for them. It's just a magnificently run club. Superb example. Long may they prosper.
You don't see planning at the elite levels of the Premier League. Not into that. Let's move on to Sporting. Beating Dortmund 3-1. Dortmund had Emre Can sent off. I thought it looked a bit harsh. Someone kicked him before he stood over him and looked menacing. But Sporting are in the knockout stages. They had to win by two clear goals, and they did. Pedro Gonçalves scored twice. His second goal was a great hit. Look, I don't know. Hands up if you know how impressive it is for Sporting to get out of this group, because I presume it's very impressive, but I don't know the answer.
Yeah. And especially since, do you remember that first game, the group phase? They lost 5-1 at home to Ajax.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time we thought, I mean, I remember watching the highlights thinking, wow, my God, they're going to find it tough. And look at that, the way they've reacted. Absolutely superb.
Group D then, Inter beating Shakhtar 2-0, Real Madrid winning 3-0 at Sheriff. So Real Madrid and Inter are through. It'll depend on who wins their game against each other to see who goes through. Basically, Real win the group unless Inter win in that game. Sheriff are into the Europa League. It ends a run of Inter being knocked out in the group stages in the last three seasons. Two for Edin Dzeko. And a lovely goal for Toni Kroos in off the bar for Real Madrid. The real story is Karim Benzema. We mentioned the story yesterday, found guilty of conspiring to blackmail Mathieu Valbuena with a sex tape, handed a one-year suspended jail term, ordered to pay a €75,000 fine. One of five people put on trial last month. It dates back to June 2015, when the two footballers were at a French training camp. At the camp, Benzema put pressure on Valbuena to pay off the blackmailers whom he had conspired with to act as an intermediary, according to prosecutors. Benzema's always denied the allegations, insisted he was only trying to help Valbuena get rid of the compromising video. Philippe, a question from Tissan, who says, WTF is a man convicted of blackmail still on the national team or any team for that matter? Is that a fair question?
I think it's a completely fair question. And it's a question that had been answered before the verdict was given, which is quite surprising. Noël Le Graët of the who is the head of the French Federation, the grand penjandrum of French football, has been in place for about three centuries, indicated before the sentence was given that even if he were convicted, Benzema would remain a French national team player, which I have to say I found very strange. Very strange. I can understand why you want Karim Benzema to be in your team, because he's never been as good as he is right now. He's matured into, I mean, an absolutely magnificent player, one of the world's best number nine. And it seems that, on the other hand, perhaps it's due to the fact that this whole sorry affair has been dragging on and on and on for so long, so that, in a way, it's lost some of its reality, I think, for people. And you can understand, up to a point, why Le Graët would say that. But basically, before the judge gave his verdict, Le Graët had already decided that whatever happened, Karim Benzema would still be eligible for selection. I don't think that would necessarily be the case in other countries. Some countries it might be the case, but I don't think that in England that would be the case. I don't think Germany would be the case. I find it, obviously, he's going to appeal against the sentence. We should notify that, and he might win this appeal, in which case it would be absolutely fine. But you would have thought that it's one of those cases when before the appeal is taking place, you know, you take time out, basically. As happens, for example, in any company, when somebody suddenly has got a sanction, is going to appeal, but during the time between the sanction and the appeal, well, you're out, you know. You'll come back if you're found, and everybody will say, well, sorry. But it seems a bit strange that it should happen that way, honestly.
Philippe, can I ask, you know, how do you think it's affected Valbuena's career? Because obviously there's a lot of talk about Benzema.
Well,
Valbuena at the time was a top player, and he's kind of, his career kind of moved on since then, hasn't it? Do you think that had an effect, or just his ability-wise?
It certainly means that, I mean, first of all, he was taken out of the French team. We should not forget that Valbuena lost his place in the French squad because of this sex tape affair. And he found it very difficult, in fact, impossible to get back in the reckoning. He went to Greece. And it has, I wouldn't say it has cost him his career because he's carried on playing. He certainly had a very, very big impact on his ambitions, and which you're quite right to say, because everybody seems to forget about that, his side of the story, because he did absolutely nothing wrong.
Moving on to the EFL, briefly, Luke says, can Derby County pull off a Harchester United season by surviving against all the odds, Rooney getting the Manchester United job off the back of it? Yeah, in the Championship, they got a point at leaders Fulham after beating Bournemouth recently, ending Fulham's 7-game winning run. So Derby's record is currently played 19, won 4, drawn 10, lost 5, points 1. They are 16 points off safety. But I think everybody now is a sort of following Derby County and hoping beyond hope that they can somehow stage a miraculous recovery. We wish them all luck, and that'll do for part two. Paul Watson will join us. It's been a while, but he's doing his charity thing, Kitmas, which he did last year as well. It's a great idea, and we'll talk to him about it next. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. It's been 4 years since Paul Watson, the former manager of Pompeii in Micronesia, Bayan Gol in Mongolia, and currently with Thimphu City in Bhutan, was on the pod. I feel guilty that we haven't asked you for 4 years, Paul, but how are you?
You wouldn't feel guilty if you played back that appearance 4 years ago. It was a shocker. I was coming in off about 2 hours sleep with a young baby, and I'd actually had to come up on the coach. So I had about, you know, I mean, half an hour's sleep for the whole night. And all I remember is just thinking I'm off the pace. I was like lunging in for things that weren't still there. If I could have been substituted halfway, I would have been, put it that way.
That is an amazing commitment to Football Weekly to get a... At what time did you get on a coach from where to get to?
From Stroud, I got on a coach at 5:30 a.m. Oh, but in my defence, I did used to commute to Micronesia, which took 26 hours of flying. So I think I thought I was harder than I was. And then I got there and just thought, this is a terrible idea, you know.
We'll have to put it back in the feed. Paul Watson's terrible appearance in 2017 that rendered him unselectable for this amount of time.
It was really bad. I just sort of hid myself for a little while after that and thought, I've ruined the Guardian podcast. It's over. The Guardian Weekly's done.
Well, we don't have any listeners anymore. We still just do it for our own fun. But look, you're doing, Paul, you're doing Kitmas 2021. Tell us all about what it is, what you achieved last year, what you're trying to do this year.
Yeah, so like most of the time I'm sending kit somewhere. So I send kit to football projects around the world just out of my garage, basically. It's like a sort of weird reverse Del Boy situation where I sort of send loads of secondhand kit to places in Africa usually, sometimes the Pacific. And at the end of last year, I had about 10 really nice brand new football shirts been given, like I think a Man United, Chelsea shirts. But I couldn't really give them to any of my projects because you can't just give 10 really nice football kits to 10 kids in, say, a refugee camp or so. It's not really a nice thing to do. So I thought, well, who might want these? And thought, well, actually, the way things are in this country at the moment, probably people who would like this most would be kids for Christmas presents, you know, maybe kids who wouldn't otherwise get one. So I just went to my local food bank in Stroud here, and they were really delighted to have them, and, you know, said, well, yeah, we could use as many of these as you can get. So I put out an appeal, and my brother, who is notable comedian Mark Watson, retweeted it, and it just gained this massive traction that suddenly we had 100 shirts and then 500 shirts, and before we knew it was just me and my wife in the house buried in piles of shirts. And we ended up doing 1,000 shirts to 16 community centres around the UK. And we just give them to the community centres, they distribute to the families. And it's just one of those projects that's just sort of exploded. So we came back to do it a second year, and it's, if anything, it's got a lot bigger. So it's great for everything but my family living situation.
I was going to say, since it's got bigger, have you got slightly more professional? Or are you just sort of in a house covered in football kits now?
It's funny. In some ways, we are. I mean, we're still just in a small house with two children. So there is still that. But my wife, Lizzie, is like, she's the brains of the operation, and she's like a spreadsheets genius.
Oh, great.
So what started out as me just like messaging a centre in Liverpool and going, can we chuck you 10 shirts, is now like her putting it into this like equation in a spreadsheet and working out, right, they got to go to Belfast, they got to go. But of course, the equation is incredibly complicated because you can't send certain kits to certain places or you're going to actually make the kids very unpopular. So it's this incredible, it's like the most intricate process. And it basically just swallows us up for about a month, where Lizzie, who just couldn't care less about football ever in her life, is just muttering, oh, it's Barcelona away, isn't it? It's Barcelona away. What do we do with that? And I'm thinking, what have I done to her?
So you've raised over $8,500 already. You're looking to raise $20,000 by the 7th of December.
I don't like to boast, but we're actually up to 19,000 now. But still, yeah, looking to get to 20 if we can. I mean, the number is quite arbitrary. Basically, there is an infinite capacity. Like some of the centres we send to have 400 families they look after year round, and so there's no way we could get too many shirts. Like, we will always have a home for them. So yeah, basically we got a crowdfunder. It's on crowdfunder.co.uk/kitmas. And I'm on Twitter at Paul_C_Watson. And if anyone has like really good condition shirts as well, we're really happy. Obviously, we take people's kits if they send them to us. But they have to be really good because obviously they're Christmas presents for kids. So you don't want them feeling they're getting cast off. So they have to be like really pristine condition.
We'll put all the links in the description on the Football Weekly page. I'll tweet it out. I'm sure everyone else will as well. I've got three ways you can donate. You can donate a shirt if it's a really good one. You can donate money, right, which is you know, probably the easiest thing to do. Or you can create your own kitmas at your club. What does that mean?
Yeah, so if you want to set up your own version of what we're doing in your community, we help guide you through that process. So say you run a football club, a little football club, a grassroots football club, whatever it is, or say you've got a community group of your own and you want to do exactly what we're doing. Get in touch with us and we'll help you set that up sort of under our umbrella, so you can use all our kind of materials and you know, we basically assist you through the process. Because what we'd love is for this thing to keep growing, but we're aware that obviously it's just at the moment four of us in total, and most of it is actually just two of us in a house in Stroud. So we'd love it to not be restricted by the fact that, yeah, you know, there's a limitation to what we can do.
Sam says, please tell Paul he's amazing and we love him. You feel 10 feet tall and a new childhood Christmas kit. It's wonderful that more kids will get to experience that because of the campaign. So look, well done, Paul. It's great, and we will all support it. And you know, fair play to you for being a good human being.
Oh, well, thank you, man. I do my best. I mean, honestly, it's the thing is, we get all this like fanfare for doing this, but honestly, the groups we work with, it's really, you know, it puts you in your place. Like, they are literally, they're working with these families year round. You know, they don't get any of this, so it feels a little bit awkward, but obviously the more of this we do, the more shirts we get out there. But it is awkward sometimes that you know you are literally doing 4 weeks of trying to find some presents for children, and they are year round helping these families. So yeah, it's kind of important to remember that they are actually the people out there doing it.
I'll rephrase it, you're a charlatan. And these,
I'm a complete fraud. Yeah,
you're a fraud. But if you do help Kitmas, you'll be helping people who really do help, but don't, you know, come on podcasts and radio stations to take the glory. Can we ask you about Thimphu City in Bhutan? Because we haven't actually got to that yet on today's pod.
Oh, really? Have you not been looking at their transfer dealings so far?
No, we haven't.
I was going to say, you didn't do an awful lot on the end of the title race last year, actually, when Paro nicked it on the last day.
We've got tweets in capitals going, why do you never talk about Thimphu City? It's an agenda.
That's it. Why do you never talk about it? So yeah, I'm helping them out at the moment. Actually, Bhutan is closed. Its borders have been closed. It's actually one of the places closest to reaching herd immunity. So I don't want to ruin that for them. But I'm helping sort of from distance. One of the main things I'm looking to do is to set up partnerships with clubs in this country to potentially give Bhutanese players a chance to come over and try out here and spend some time training. So it's actually something I did when I was in Mongolia. And a lot of what I did in Mongolia, I wouldn't do again. It was like a big learning experience. But the one thing that went really well was we brought over a 16-year-old kid called, Gamba. He's called Gamba or Gangbaya. And he was a 16-year-old, like, very talented kid. Had never really had much opportunity to test himself outside of Mongolia. We brought him to Barnet for a month. And he played in their under-16s. He scored against Jose Mourinho's son in goal for Fulham. And he just absolutely loved it. He thrived. And then he actually, after that, went to Hungary and became the first professional Mongolian player in Europe. So the hope with Bhutan is to do something quite similar, where you just open these opportunities up, where at the moment it's all quite insular. They get very few chances to play abroad. If you win the league, you get one AFC Cup game. And if you lose that, that's your season. And the national team are barely playing any games either. So the hope is just to sort of give some of these kids an opportunity that they wouldn't really get otherwise, I think.
I mean, in many ways, this pod is an outlet for Barry to, someone who wouldn't get the opportunity normally to express himself. So, you know,
yeah, it's a bit like the Truman Show, isn't it? We just set this all up for Barry every week now.
Paul, you're back for a full episode soon. Not another 4-year wait. So that is great. Please, even though we're doing it all remotely, can you get on a bus at 5 a.m. for 3 hours? beforehand, just to recreate the 2017 moment. And I'm sure you were great that time.
I feel like Harry Maguire lining up to play against Albania. I am gonna really prove myself here.
Cut your ears.
I'll get some massive tap-ins. You'll be sort of saying, so it's I'll yell PSG and then just cut my ears like that.
Brilliant. Thanks for coming on, mate. Good luck with Kitmas.
Lovely. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks.
Great to chat to you. Cheers.
Paul Watson there. We'll put out all the details. We'll tweet them all out. We'll put them on the description page. And yeah, what a nice chat. All right. Let's talk about the fan-led review. Don't turn off, because it is important, even if there is some detail. The government's fan-led review has said Premier League clubs should pay a stamp duty-style tax on every transfer fee to help support the English football pyramid, one of 47 recommendations to safeguard the future of the game. The understanding is the government are going to support it. The review also recommends that an independent regulator should oversee the English game. It will be able to grant licences to compete in league football, would have oversight of a club's finances and decide whether owners and directors were fit to hold their role, including the application of a new integrity test. Other proposals include a golden share held by supporters that could veto certain key changes in a football club, from changing the name to selling the grounds, amongst other things. We'll get the FSA on to talk about it soon. I just wonder what people's initial thoughts to this review are, Baz.
My initial thoughts are that it's a good thing that's come up with some good ideas. I would be concerned that once it's been through the wash and the tumble dryer, that it may be watered down and not be as good as the initial promise shows. I've quite admire Tracy Crouch. Her heart seems to be in the right place, which is not something I'd say about many Tory politicians. And I think the fact that she isn't on the front bench suggests that she has something about her, a bit of integrity. I will reserve judgment, but my initial thoughts, I haven't read the whole thing, obviously, because it only came out yesterday. I've been quite busy. But having read the bullet points, I am initially impressed, but judgment very much being reserved until some of these bullet points are put into practice.
Shadow boards made up of fans who must be consulted by clubs on key decisions. Limits on the amount of money owners can put into a club. A reappraisal of parachute payments to be determined between the Premier League and the Football League. And if there's no solution by the regulator, compulsory relegation and promotion clauses in players' contracts. Compulsory equality, diversity, inclusion plans for every club. A review into the future of the women's game. Trials to allow the consumption of alcohol while watching a match. Philippe, you've had a look?
Yeah, I've had a look and I'm impressed. And as Bas said, I'm not surprised. I mean, Tracy Crouch, I have had some dealings with her, and she's always struck me as somebody who was a genuinely good egg and somebody who took a lot of heart. I mean, she she's really taken that to heart. And if should these recommendations be implemented, it would be actually quite huge. And one thing that in particular that interests me, one of my big bugs about football, where it's going at the moment, is the emergence of fan engagement platforms and fan tokens. And should that those recommendations be implemented, that would be the end of the so-called fan engagement platforms, which would be the most wonderful thing. Because
is this the sort of crypto? I wrote a piece about non-fungible tokens, and I still don't know what they are.
No. It's basically you buy those tokens, and you're given a say in the way that your club is run, inverted commas, which means like you can vote on the color of the kit, or you can vote on the song that's going to be played when celebrating a goal, and all these sorts of nonsense. But you have to pay for it. It's become, it's one of those other parasites which is has sucked itself to the flanks of football, and is at the moment putting a massive effort into going into the game, sponsoring teams. They're horrible people. They're horrible people, and. Actually, I should stop here because you're going to have to beat me, because they, for me, are a disease that has got to be eradicated now. And should those things be implemented, these recommendations be implemented, and notably the shadow boards, then suddenly all these so-called fan tokens, they become completely irrelevant, because this is where the real fan power representation is going to be, because that's where they're going to discuss. They're going to discuss, they're going to discuss the color of the kit, like because strangely enough, it does matter if you're a supporter of your own club that it's the proper colors. And then, but why should you have to buy a share to be able to have a say? No, let's have these people on the shadow board. Absolutely. The one thing that I'd be very interested to know as well is how strict the controls for the suitability of football owners and operatives is going to be. And interestingly, if it could be retroactive, I don't think it's going to be, but it would be great fun if an independent regulator could actually have a look at who exactly owns what in football clubs up and down the country.
You're an idealist, Philippe. A dreamer.
Maybe.
That's why we love you.
Maybe.
Jonathan, always hard to follow Philippe on one of his glorious soliloquies, but have you got any thoughts?
Yeah, the bit in the fan review that, I mean, it's always easy to be cynical about these, and to be honest, there's a lot of parts of it where you question. It's nice to see it in writing and read that, but will it actually happen? For example, are they really going to have any kind of due diligence on potential owners? But the key thing for me that I liked in the review is Tracy Crouch, there was criticism of the FA in the limited role they play, quote unquote, in dealing with players who get released from academies. And I think that's a massive part that I liked, is this. There was a call to kind of create this holistic, comprehensive system for when players get released to deal with like the mental health issues. Because for myself, in my day-to-day life, like dealing with players who get released from academies and things like that, I think the mental health side of it is something that kind of goes just completely ignored. And I liked the fact that there was something in there about an aftercare system and creating a pathway and a proper, sense of dealing with these players, because every year there's hundreds of players who get released and the FA kind of deal with them as an afterthought at times. So that's the bit that I'm encouraged by, and I hope it can be implemented.
Cool. Like I said, we'll speak to the Football Supporters Association, provided we win that award. If we don't, obviously screw them. I'm kidding. Premier League games this weekend. We don't have a lot of time to preview them. We'll watch them. And we'll talk about them on Monday. But look, Man City, West Ham, 2nd v. 4th on Sunday. First Manchester United game in the Premier League without Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, away at Stamford Bridge. That'll be fascinating to see how they get on against Chelsea on Sunday at 2:00. Brentford 5 without a win against Everton, 6 without a win. So both of those teams will lose. Kieran, predictions for Sunday's FAI Cup final, St Patrick's Athletic versus Bohemian FC, Barry.
Don't care because Shamrock Rovers aren't in it.
Okay, there we are. Living in Soil says, I took a gulp of tea at precisely the wrong part of Max reading Adam's rather poignant letter. I failed spectacularly to keep my mouth closed while laughing. Tea everywhere and trying to remain as silent as possible as husband is on his important Zoom call in the background. Yeah, it was quite the non sequitur after that beautifully emotional email to ask us what our favourite pie was, but that's why I liked it so much. Okay, I've got two emails that I haven't read yet, but I'll read them anyway, and that's how we'll finish. Dominic says, "Hi, Max, Barry and crew, living in Sydney, Australia. I was always very envious of hearing stories of fans meeting pod members and sharing a good moment in person. When I heard Max was moving to Australia, I was excited at the chance of seeing him and getting a photo, saying hi and talking about why Wilson hates United so much. I'm currently on a two-week internship at a radio station in Sydney when I had to take a day off because I had early stages of tonsillitis and was fairly sick as a result. I hardly checked my phone or what was happening at the station until I came back to work today on Thursday, only to see a photo of Max in the studio I've been working at for the last 2 weeks. To say I was devastated was an understatement. I asked the producer what Max is like, to which he responded, 'He's actually funny, and apparently his podcast is pretty big. Anyway, Max, hope I didn't miss my one chance to see you. I will happily come back and work for free to get a photo and say good day.' All right, Dominic, well, let's arrange it somehow." Rob says, "Hello. I haven't, like your recent correspondence, dreamt of Barry in unexpected circumstances, but I did a couple of weeks ago dream a full episode of the pod. The lineup was Barry, Wilson and Mark Langdon of the Racing Post. I don't remember most of what was said, but a good chunk of it, I think, consisted of Wilson telling stories about supporting Sunderland. It must have been a fairly good episode, as my wife told me the next morning that I'd woken her up by laughing in my sleep." That's going too far, Rob. I suggest you take a bit of time off. "Thanks for all the pods. It's impressive that the quality holds up, even in the subliminal episodes you've embedded into my subconscious." There we are. Anyway, look, that'll do for today. Thanks for your time, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Philippe, your hand is up. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Can I do a personal announcement?
Oh, yes.
I'll be on stage in London for the first time in 4 years this coming Sunday at the Lexington. Be there. Yeah, first
there
concert with the full band.
Where is the Lexington, please?
Near King's Cross. I count on you, of course, too. You've got time to take your plane and back.
Absolutely. Oh, 100% no be there. I'll come back, play for Poly Fours on Saturday, go to the gig on Sunday. Do you need to get online for tickets, or is it just walk in? What's the deal?
You're just Louis Philippe in the Night Mail. You'll find us. And bring your clarinet.
Marvellous. Barry, have you got any... are you performing anywhere this weekend?
I believe we have a live show on Tuesday. And
oh, yes, we do.
Talk Sport on Monday morning, or Sunday morning even.
Oh, right. Yes, we should publicise the live show. This is the last, pretty much the last part. Buy tickets, please. I believe there's about 6.5 billion still available worldwide. TheGuardian.com/GuardianLive. Me, Barry, Lars, Wilson, and an amazing halftime show in which producer Joel is going off tomorrow to film all morning with a celebrity guest. And I'm really quite excited about it. Anyway, we'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.